Welcome to Wyatt's Haven of Bliss. This is Wyatt Hout. Today I'm going to talk about photography, and for all you enthusiasts about digital cameras and some Apple-related post-processing nonsense. I'm going to talk about my camera first, and then maybe get into some stuff about organizing your pictures, best practices, and also some post-processing information, and then we'll see what I feel like after I tell you all about that stuff. I shoot with Nikon gear. A lot of people love Canon. They're pretty much identical. There's different things about the bodies. The bodies change daily, but the lenses pretty much remain the same, and they've been a polished product because they work in both the film and digital, and that really doesn't change anything. So if you buy some nice camera lenses, that's a good place to invest your money because they're not going to go down in value. The body, unfortunately, is going to depreciate very quickly, just like your car. So I don't really recommend putting too much money into your body. You can find a good one for about $1,000, but your lenses could run, you know, $1,500 to $2,000 each for a lot of the really nice picture lenses. But you know, those pictures are amazing that they take. But what do you really need, and how do you justify need, and how many mouths in Africa could you feed, and all that stuff you should consider before you even embark on getting into this hobby, because it's really easy to get addicted. I don't have an 800 number for you, but just be careful. That's all I got to say. So I have a Nikon camera with a D70 body. I think there's a D200 coming out pretty soon. Like I said, don't spend more than, you know, $1,200 on a body just because they're going to depreciate unless you're going to really make some money off of it. But if you haven't done that far, then you're not going to. But my favorite lens that I have is this VR 70-200. I'm holding it right now. It's pretty heavy. It's called VR because it's vibration reduction, just like Canon's image stabilization IS lenses. Nikon VR lenses are beautiful, and what they do is they counteract camera shake. Just like when I shake this, it will flatten it out so it sounds like this without any shakes. So you get the idea. 70-200 is pretty much the zoomed in range. I'll stick out my fingers and hold out my hand like a little camera, and that shows me only a small box of viewing area, whereas my 17-55DX lens will show me pretty much everything that can see, and it'll probably even see wider than I can see. I don't know, what is vision, 35 millimeter about? I think 35 millimeter is about the same millimeter as our eye, just for the pictures looking about the same. But then again, you know, that also depends. So you have my 70-200 VR, you have your 17-55DX lens, and I also have a 60 millimeter prime micro macro lens. They're all f/2.8, so f/2.8 is the aperture, and they are beautiful glass, and I recommend all of them, especially the 70-200 VR, just because, you know, the multi-purpose of it and using it as a portrait lens, you can save yourself from buying one of those $1,400 85 millimeter portrait lenses. You know, if you do portraits full time, you can't beat the primes, because those primes are fit to work perfectly at their millimeter. You know, you get if you don't have the money to invest in these kind of lenses, I recommend starting with one of those 55 millimeter f/1.8. They're about $100. You can get those anywhere, and they take beautiful pictures, and you'll learn all about aperture. I'd recommend that to start, and then also getting yourself some sort of mid-range zoom from like 28mm to 70mm. A lot of cameras come with something like that. I think that the D70 came with an 18-70mm f3.5 lens, which is pretty good. You don't need lenses like mine, but they will really take a lot better pictures. Mine will than those, but if you don't know how to use this stuff, you're really better off with a point-and-shoot camera, because those will take care of everything and you don't have to think. And it's like an automatic car. And there's a reason why you pay more for a manual, even though it costs less to make. It's just more fun to drive. And once you understand all the stuff, and then you've actually spent the time and know that you're going to love it, I'm going to rant and rant so you get the idea. So I love my camera. I also have an SB800 speed light. That's a flash or a sync. if you want to call it, with a diffuser, which is like a plastic lid over the flash, which balances out the light and also gives you some side and up and down light along the sides too. And that's a beautiful flash that shoots a long range too, and it really makes a big difference in those low light areas when you just don't have any light and you're forced to use it. So that's my camera. You can find the exact same gear in Canon. And typically most cameras have either a Canon or a Nikon mount. There are other mounts, but the Canon and Nikon pretty much monopolize the market. And that'll fit a lot of other cameras. Like Kodak makes some cameras which aren't very good and I don't recommend buying, but they have mounts for camera on the Canon and on the Nikon mount. So the different lenses I have is the 17-55 DX, which is a cropped lens. Most digital cameras have a crop factor of 1.5 to 1.2. And some people count that as a multiplier in the millimeter, but that's not true. That just means that the actual picture area is cropped down, but you still have the same millimeter. So even though I have a 200 millimeter lens on the camera right now and it has a 1.5 crop, still 200 millimeter, but you're only seeing, you know, the middle section of that lens. The reason why that's important is the millimeter tells you the, you know, the distance it is focusing. And if I take a 35 millimeter lens and I take your picture, you're going to notice that you're going to have more three dimension to your face. Your nose will be bigger and the things that are closer to the camera will be exaggerated. And things farther away, you know, will not so. But if you use like an 85 millimeter lens, or if you shoot like 100 millimeter on this VR 70-200 millimeter lens, when you take a portrait, the faces will be flattened out. You won't have the big noses, and things will look straighter. You don't have curvature to buildings. You know, things will be very up and down. But you know, that's pros and cons. And sometimes you want it, sometimes you don't. But I'll tell you what, wide-angle fisheye lens pictures never show up in the papers and the magazine for a reason. They're just not accepted because they're not nice. They're not professional, and I don't know. But I love these lenses. There's other lenses you can get for different scenarios. It depends what you like to shoot. I have a teleconverter too, which is a 1.7x, which is also a multiplies. And what that does is it zooms things in, and but you know it is at a cost of not only quality of the picture, but you also lose light. You have to multiply your aperture with a teleconverter. So my f/2.8 lenses are jumped all the way up to f/4, and sometimes you really need that extra light for low light. So I recommend starting off with that 55 millimeter prime and learning how to use that baby, because you can take some really beautiful pictures with that. There's also that 85 millimeter prime that you're talking about, you know, $1,200 for that lens. The really good ones can be like $1,500, so don't buy that one until you're a full-time portrait person, like you're doing weddings or something. But who really wants to photograph weddings anyway? Not me, just like those chimichangas. So I have my camera. The good thing about digital SLRs is my battery can take 800 pictures. I tend to shoot on 1 gigabyte cards. Some people think that's even a little bit too large just because you got too many eggs in one basket. But I shoot RAW plus JPEG just to save me a lot of time in post-processing. And I recommend you consider that also, just because post-processing is horrible. Take your pictures right. As they say, it's better to take the beer can out of the picture rather than to Photoshop it out. It just trust me on that one. So, you know, maybe 512 is good for you too. It's just a matter of how often you change your cards. You know, I've had cards go bad on me before. I have a little wallet with a bunch of cards in it. And sometimes I have a little adapter for my iPod too that I can dump pictures on the iPod. But, you know, I don't think that it's that reliable. Stay away from, I think, the micro drive, just because it has moving parts and the camera moves a lot and it shakes and breaks, and you want a solid state memory just because it works better. So yeah, There are other devices for automatically downloading them, storage temporarily if you're on a trip, so you don't have to buy 30 gigabytes of flash. You can find like a hard drive or whatever, but remember, you want to have as many backups as possible. And you know, it'd be horrible to go to Europe, take 5,000 pictures, and then lose the little iPod to a drop in the metal detector or something like that. So that's my camera. I'd also recommend the Nikon system and the Canon system, and not really any of the others, just because they're, you know, they are nice, but you're going to have a big investment. There's some Fevron sensors out there that you can buy, which are interesting technology. I don't think they're quite there, but they'll probably be what are in almost all the lenses eventually, where it takes a picture, not of like, well, you have a composite picture that the CCD takes, that's what Nikon and Camera use, but the Fevron sensor, it actually takes a blue picture, a red picture, and a green picture, and then combines them. So the megapixel is smaller, but the sharpness and quality of that picture is a lot higher and more accurate, such that, you know, you can, if you up-res the picture to a larger megapixel, then they'd be equivalent. You know, the number of megapixels aren't really that important. Once you get to 6 megapixel, you really don't need anything bigger than that, unless you're really cropping those pictures down, or you're printing them for prints the size of a building, you know. And, you know, Photoshop will help you. You know, I'm not going to talk about the whole ballooning, resizing, about sizing and parts and stuff like that. That's more of a philosophical and religious argument. But I think that that gives you a little idea of my camera system. And you know what? I love it, and I get a lot of attention for it, unfortunately. But, you know, the pictures it takes are so much more beautiful once you learn how to take them. And, you know, especially when you start using that flash, there's also little gels you can put in front of the flash to help balance out the light. Because, you know, light is really a problem. And save yourself all the trouble from the beginning in the shooting raw. Because how many photo shoots I've ruined just because they look beautiful, and I just turned out that I have one little setting off on my JPEGs, and they're all ruined, or they just could never get them just the right color again. But if you shoot in RAW, you can not worry about exposure, you can not worry about color temperature, and there's just a lot of things you can just save yourself the trouble on, rather than having it perfect too. And you also consider that one RAW picture is probably worth 3 or 4 JPEGs, to be honest, just because of the way you can fix it. That's about what I'm going to say for that. So let's move on to part two. Let's talk about actually getting the pictures off the camera onto your computer. I use a Mac. Any self-respecting person would use a Mac. But if you don't have that option, unfortunately, and you have a PC, you know, I am sympathetic to you, and I hope you're not always stuck that way, but let's move on. Because they say, what, 10% of users use a Mac? But they're the top 10%? Well, at least that's what Douglas Adams said. I don't know if you like Dilbert or not. So, okay. You shoot on these compact flash cards, and you know, you take 150 pictures on 1 gigabyte card, and that's a JPEG and RAW together, and you got a couple cards. So you got, I don't know, 300 pictures in a shoot, and typically if you go out for a couple hours. Just because you want to get the picture right, you know, you can take a picture of someone 100 times and they all look different. And you want to download these all to your camera, from your camera to your computer, and now you're going to start realizing that it takes just as long to process these buggers as it does to take them. So you spend 2 hours shooting, you're going to spend 2 hours processing at least. I go do a wedding. I don't like doing weddings. I'm not a wedding photographer. That's all I'll say about that. But, you know, you go shoot a wedding for a couple hours, you're going to spend like 8 hours processing those pictures at least. And you got to get them all right because they want them all to be perfect. And you got to make the DVD and the pretty little website with the pink little flares and all that stuff that they want. And remember that you're marrying your best friend. But let's talk about the pictures here for a second. You got all these pictures. You got 300 pictures, and you download them to your computer, and you put them all in one folder. And you forgot that you didn't set the numbering sequence so that every single card starts the sequence over. And you're like, oh no, what do I do? Well, you can use these programs like Nikon View. Nikon View is a free one if you have a Nikon camera. I'm sure that Canon has something similar. There's probably even some pretty good open source ones that you can get for free or buy for a couple dollars. I like Photo Mechanic for Mac. If you use a Mac, Photo Mechanic is like the only way to go for raw browsing images. You know, I recommend it. You can go to camerabits.com and buy the light version for $50. It's not on their website, but if you call them up, they'll sell it to you. You gotta say Photo Mechanic LE because the light is different, but and then get that baby and save yourself hours of work. So you got 300 pictures and you want to download them and you screwed it up. So you use Nikon View and you change your settings and you rename the pictures so that the file names are the dates. You know, don't put extraneous information on there like DSCN, blah, blah, blah. Just name it like year, month, day, dash, hour, minute, second, dash, sequence ID, dot, JPEG. That's it. That way all your pictures are in order. If you open up a browser or Explorer and you look at the pictures, they're all by time. And then you want to organize all of your pictures you shot in one shoot into one folder. I'd also recommend like doing it by the day. So like if you go to Washington, D.C. like I did, and you take a whole bunch of pictures, make sure the folder is by the date. You can even do it by events. Sometimes it's nice to organize them so the subject is common, just so it has meaningful name. So you throw all your pictures in one folder and you can look at it later in 2 seconds and you know, okay, these are from this time to this time, and the title of the folder tells me what it is. I'd also recommend putting the year and month and day at the beginning of the name of the folder, just so that when you have lots of galleries, you know, adding up, and they'll automatically sort by the date. But then you'll also have a description there, a meaningful description, like Washington, D.C., you know, the flower garden, the zoo, you know, your sister, whatever you're shooting pictures of, your daughter, and then you can browse through them and see easily what you have on there. You know, I recommend saving all your raw pictures. Burn those all to DVDs, save them on an external hard disk, put them on a tape so you have a backup, and make another backup again. Just so that, you know, if one gets lost, you still have your pictures. Or your hard drive fails, you know, you still have your pictures, and you can still go back to them. And you'll be sad, because if you upload them up to Snapfish or some other place, and then you lose the pictures, the only way you can ever get the pictures back again is to buy the DVD or whatever from them at $25 for something that you could spend 30 cents at Walgreens and get a copy of. So use Nikon Capture, use Nikon Transfer, use whatever program you have, and have it automatically pull the pictures off of your flashcards on your computer and rename the pictures for you. You can even make it make a folder that uses the date, so you don't have to worry about it. And now you have all your pictures are on the computer and in the folder. Don't hook your camera up to your computer directly. You don't want to be hauling, if you're going to Starbucks, your $8,000 camera and your $5,000 computer all in your arms down the street, and people are staring at you and saying, oh, I gotta jump that guy. You know, what if you dropped it? You know, what if it happened? You'd lose everything, and that'd be really sad. Leave your camera at home. Buy a little wallet, put all your flashcards in the wallet, and take those with you. If you have a laptop, a great suggestion is buying those little PCM-CIA adapters. You can stick the card right in your computer, and it doesn't take up any space. Or at least you can buy a USB adapter. And that'll work on any computer. If you have a PC or a desktop, or you know, if you have a Power Mac G5. If you have a Mac, you know, that's a really good way to go to process these images. You know, people say that Macs are good for graphics. You know what? They are better for everything. And the reason why people say Macs are better for graphics is because, like, 1972 Photoshop only ran on the Mac. And come on, people. This is, like, 30 years later. Apple's been dying for 20 years, right? So get yourself a PowerBook. Get yourself a MacBook. Get what you need to get a self-respecting digital processing machine. You know, if you have the money, a G5 is a great computer. There's going to be Intel and Power Mac soon. You know, I'd probably recommend holding out for those too, but try to stay away from PCs. It's more than common sense. It's an ethical choice. So I'm getting away from my propaganda here, and I'm talking about my pictures. And, you know, I've transferred them to my hard drive, and now they're all in this pictures folder, my gallery folder. And I have a lot of these pictures, and my hard disk is filling up because every picture takes up 10 megabytes by the time you have the JPEG and the RAW on there. That, you know, my 80 gigabyte hard disk is suddenly full, and I've only been shooting photographs for 2 days. What do I do? Well, remember how I told you to back up your pictures? You know, we're going to get into some post-processing here, but let's first talk about, like I had promised, how to organize and some best practices for your pictures, and how to handle that such that, you know, it makes sense, and you don't go crazy later, and you can find what you like, and you can enjoy your pictures. That you can come back easily and look at what you had done, this beautiful work, and not just forget it the instant you take it. And give the gift that keeps on giving to yourself again and again. Okay, we have all the pictures on our computer. We're running out of room. First thing you want to do is you want to burn them to DVDs. I recommend DVDs such that, you know, they have more room, and it's only because I keep running out of space on a CD. I can't put a photo shoot on a CD because a CD only holds 700 megabytes, and each of my camera cards hold a gig, and I tend to shoot 2 gigs every time I photograph, you know. So, you know, that's a lot of pictures, and I'm looking at, you know, maybe 3 or 4 galleries on one DVD. I would consider that a good rule of thumb, because if you shoot only in JPEG pictures, you know, now I'm talking more about processing your pictures. So if you use a DSLR or a compact camera that's $400 from Kodak that you bought and got for Christmas, you know, either one, this will apply to you. Everything before now is really more oriented against those semi-pros who really have the cameras, who really shoot in RAW. So, okay, you don't want to put all of your pictures on one CD. Say if your entire photo album for 5 years fits on one CD, you better make a couple copies of that CD. Just because you lose the CD or the CD wears out, they do wear out after 3 or 4 years. Just like a book fades, so does the CD on the inside. Scratches don't matter, they can be perfectly fine, they'll still fade. Just because the ink on the CD will start going from black to brown to lighter brown, and the paper starts going from white to light brown to brown, and then suddenly you can't read the difference between the dark and the light, and your pictures are gone. Wouldn't that be sad? That's why you have to use magnetic tape too. I'm preaching it myself because I just have doubles of DVDs and I need to put them on a magnetic tape. And even now I'm looking at my old DVDs and they're starting to get hard for my computer to read them. So you have all your pictures on your computer. Organize them so you have like 4 albums on one disc, and then burn that to a disc, and then write a number on there. Number it from 1 to whatever, you know, number. This is album 1. You can write the date on there too if you want. And put that in a CD case. And then burn another one of it, of the same disc, and put that in a different CD case. So that you have 2 CD cases with your pictures. And then leave 1 CD case in your trunk, and then 1 of it at home, or 1 of it in your apartment, and 1 of them at work, or in a safety deposit box. Just so they're in different places in case you have a fire. Because that would be really sad if you lost all your pictures. Because I've lost my pictures before. It is kind of like losing a child sometimes. Especially when you lose a lot of data. It happens to the best of us. And computers fail. It's not a matter of if. It's a matter of when. And they're going to go away. I also recommend that you convert all of your RAWs to JPEGs. You keep the RAWs for sure. In addition, you want to keep the JPEGs. Just because technologies tend to go away over time, and you want to keep it in a format that's going to stay. JPEGs aren't going to go away, not for a long time. They could, but make sure you back up all your software so that you could get them. But here's a scenario, if you don't believe me. Let's say you're using a Mac, you got a G4 PowerBook, and they upgrade, now they're using Intel. Okay, new processor. Let's say your old camera, RAW, was the only program that edited your RAW files. It ran on the G4 Mac, but they never upgraded it to the Intel one because they created a new format that works even better that they only sell. And suddenly you're left in the dust. And the only way to access them is to use the old software on your old computer. and then you drop the computer, or the hard drive dies, or you get something happens, and that computer doesn't work anymore. Now your computer is gone, and so are your pictures, because you have no way to access them. That's sad. It happens with scanners, it happens with lots of different things. So you want to back up all your pictures to discs. You gotta do a disc, and you gotta do it to a tape. Tape lasts longer than CDs by far. You know, you get 15 years out of it, a tape, but you'll get like 3 or 4, sometimes 5 years out of a disc. So, you know, you gotta keep that in mind. And you have all your albums. So now I have 37 DVDs of pictures. And I have 2 copies of that, in case one gets lost, you know. And you realize they add up really fast. And even DVDs are really slow for viewing pictures. And it takes forever to go through them. So I recommend, in addition to backing them up, that you also, you know, you convert your RAW files into JPEGs, or you only have JPEGs, whatever you choose. Keep the RAW files if you have them. Downsize those to like 800 as the maximum width or height, so that you have another folder with downsized images. So now I'm talking about a RAW folder, a JPEG full-size folder, and then a JPEG downsized folder. So that, you know, each picture is about 200K, you know, and, you know, you can save those on your hard disk because they don't take as much space. You're talking 50 megabytes for an album, probably 30 on average of the downsized pictures, and then you can keep those on your computer without it filling up your hard disk. And then, if you have a Mac, I recommend, you know, importing those into your iPhoto, such that you have folders, and the folder represents the disk number, and then inside of that folder you have an album, which represents a folder that has all the pictures in it. So it's broken up the exact same way, so that if I want to go look at, you know, disk 30, I can see that there's 5 albums in there, and I click on the album, and then I can look at all the pictures that I did on that shoot, and it's all right there, and it's fast, and they're big enough that you can put them on your desktop or send them to people full size. And they're also big enough that if you want to downsize them and put them on your, you know, your gallery, your web page, or, you know, send a 4x6 picture, you could do it instantly, and you would still have high enough quality, and they would look nice. So I recommend that. It's been really fun, and plus it's really easy to go browse through your old pictures in like 2 seconds. I realize that I have 20,000 pictures in my catalog at least, you know, and maybe a lot more. And you'll like it too. You should probably back up that too after you've made those too. Unless you burn those JPEGs downsized also onto the DVDs, which I like to do now so that I have 3 folders. Some people put the NEF and the JPEG together in the same folder, and a lot of programs will handle that. Like PhotoMechanic and Nikon View will, when it opens the picture, it'll say NEF or RAW plus JPEG, and then it takes care of it. But I noticed that that slows down the browsers, so I just go ahead and separate them. But, you know, you can decide. It's probably better to keep them together. There's pros and cons. I don't like having 1,000 pictures in one folder, just because it takes forever sometimes for it to open up. And speed is a big issue, especially in post-processing. So moving on. Now that you have your backups of your pictures, and you've downsized them and imported the downsized images into a catalog, so you have a thumbnail catalog, and I would say, you know, and you put one of your copies of your CDs in your house, and one in your car, or in a safety deposit box, or wherever, or you upload them to a server, just so that you have them in different locations. You know, I think you have a start on keeping them organized. The next step after you have them organized is viewing them, you know. It takes forever to view them when they're these raw pictures because they're 6 megabytes each. And when they load, they just take forever, not to mention processing them. I know that Preview and Tiger will now work with RAW, but still that's really slow. Nikon View is slow. They're all slow on a Mac just because it's so much processing power to do it. I mean, memory helps you. You want to have as much memory as you can, but that's mostly for loading a lot of things at once. But with images, there's a lot of computation that goes on, a lot of vector stuff, and you really got to have a faster processor to really make a difference. So, I mean, you have to consider your bottlenecks, and that's really one of them. Especially when these uncompressed images are like 50 megabytes of memory, so it's definitely memory and processor issue. If you have less than a gigabyte of memory, you need to upgrade that, and I recommend getting close to 2 gigabytes if you can afford it. Buy some memory off of eBay, don't buy it from Apple. For PC, you can figure it out. I'm not going to talk about PCs today. So, now that I have all these pictures and I want to go through them, there's a program called Photo Mechanic by Camera Bits that you can download. And there's a light version. If you call them up and say I want the LE version, they'll sell it to you for $50. It's the same thing. And I don't really see any advantage of the professional over it. It's $150 for the professional, $50 for the LE. Buy the LE. You can browse your pictures so fast. It's like 1 second to open a NEF RAW file. And it can take like 15 seconds on Nikon Capture. And when you want to just go through your pictures and you have to wait 15 seconds to load every picture, that's an eternity. Especially when you're processing them and they take 30 seconds. I have a program called Downsize by Stunt that will downsize my JPEGs automatically to small JPEGs. That works really fast. It's a nice program. Photo Mechanic will also do that. The Downsize app costs $6. You can probably get it for free, though. Try it out for free. I recommend those two if you want to make a purchase. Otherwise, it's going to just take forever. Post-processing is a nightmare. But this is more reason why you need to learn to take the pictures right the first time. And, you know, as they say, you take the beer can out of the picture rather than plan photoshopping it out later. You get it right the first time, and you take more pictures. You know what? And here's another hint. You don't process every single picture. You know, you get your Photo Mechanic out, you go through the pictures, and you delete the ones that are all white. You know, if you blew the highlights, you committed the sin, you repent, you delete it, and you move on. There's just nothing you can really do about it. You know, some of those pictures that are underexposed, you know, I also consider axing them too if you have another one like it. If you don't, then you need to fix it. But, you know, you go through your pictures and you pick out the ones that need to be processed and you process those ones. Don't process every single picture if they look fine. It's better to use your Photo Mechanic and you select out the ones that are in need of being processed and process those. You're just going to spend hours trying to do this. And don't get in the habit of feeling like you have to save every single picture just because you're, you know, hoarding them, pack rat, and all the other cliches. And you're never going to look at it again, and you're just wasting your time. And you could use that time to take more pictures. Consider it. And make it so. Alright. Photo Mechanic, plus. Use that. Nikon View is good for renaming them. Put everything in iPhoto. Make it useful. iPhoto is great, it integrates with everything, and it's just it's a cool app once you put some use to it. You know, it's slow. I hear there's a new iPhoto out, though, with 2006 iLife. I haven't checked it out, but it's probably pretty good. You know, it's a simple app, but it takes care of some basic functionality automatically, and you'll be happy with yourself. So lastly, I'm moving on. I know this is dragging, but, you know, it takes a while to do post-processing. And you're just going to have to get used to me talking about a whole lot of stuff because you're going to have to figure out other things to do while you're waiting for your pictures to post-process because they can take 30 seconds per picture to process on a Mac. If you have a G5 Power Mac, you know, that's great. You're going to process them a lot faster. But post-processing is just a matter of life. Not only does post-processing take so long, you have to figure out the settings for every picture, and that can be a nightmare too. You know, if you're shooting low light, you got to switch all of your White balances the incandescent. You know, to balance out that underexposure of the red, because, you know, the camera is nothing like your eye. Your eye automatically balances light. The camera doesn't do that. You have to fix the exposure on things. You know, you're shooting a picture of something that's all black with a white background. Suddenly, it's all really light color because it thinks that that black is neutral. You got to go change all your exposures. You know, there's a lot of scenarios you have to go through. It's like all your pictures are underexposed, and you have to raise them all. The most common is you have to apply a curve. There's some really great curves. Look at Photogenics. That's with the F-O-T-O-G-E-N. I think it's E-T-I-C-S. Anyways, it starts with an F. You do a search for their point-and-shoot curve, and you can apply that to your Nikon cameras, or at least use it in Photoshop. And I think they also have a white whiting one that's really good. I recommend applying a curve to your camera so that it balances out those middle tones. Digital SLRs tend to underexpose the pictures on purpose so that you don't blow the highlights. And you can raise the exposure later, but once the highlights are blown and everything's all white, there's just nothing you can fix. And like I said, that's the sin of photography, blowing the highlights. So if you see a picture and something is all white, then you know it wasn't processed right. You know, it's just easy to pick that out, especially when you get good and you start realizing what makes a picture good compared to other pictures. Use batch processing and process only the ones that need to be processed. Save yourself the trouble. Convert those into JPEG. Do it on not like 100%, but do like 90% quality. And maybe 95%, so that, you know, it's almost as good. And then downsize those babies. I use Nikon Capture for Nikon. You know, Adobe Camera Raw is an excellent plug-in too for Photoshop. If you have Photoshop, Photoshop is a wonderful program. You got to learn how to do batches. To do a batch in Photoshop, what you do is you open up your picture and you create a new action and you hit record while the picture is open, and then you apply your changes, you resize it, you go into levels, you do an auto level, or, you know, drag the middle slider around to change the exposure, and then you go sharpen the image, and you can fade the sharpen to like 80%, or whatever you want to do to make those colors right, and then you can go to File, and Save Export for Web, and then you pick a folder, and you save that as JPEG High, and hit save, and then you close your picture, and then you hit stop on the record. And then suddenly you have an action that will take an open picture, and it'll apply the changes, and it'll save it and close it. After you have that, you go up in the file menu, you go down to batch, automate, you select your action from the list, and the first field you want to select a folder where your pictures are, and then the second one you just want to say do nothing. Just disable it so it doesn't do anything, because your action is going to close it for you, and then you run that automated batch, and that'll take care of it for you. It's pretty simple. There's a couple different ways to do it, but that's about the easiest with Photoshop. In camera Nikon Capture, you're going to want to use the multiple image editor. It's like you open the image folder, and then you can click the little corner of one of the settings and copy all the settings from one of the windows, and then you can Control V or open Apple V and paste all those settings to all the pictures, and then you can do a batch save. That'll handle that for you. But then again, you know, if you do these processes, they're going to take 30 seconds a picture, and it's just a lot of work. So I hope you've enjoyed that, and you've learned something as I talked about my camera, my gear. I also talked about getting the pictures onto my computer, and then I talked about how to organize them, some best practices, and then finally a little bit about post-processing, not a whole lot. Thanks for visiting Wyatt's Haven of Bliss podcast. You can visit the website at www.havenofbliss.com, and you can read other columns and listen to other podcasts and tell all your friends all about my website, and I hope you get something valuable out of it. Drop me an email at Wyatt@havenofbliss.com and tell me what you think. Tell me if you hated it, loved it, or just, you know, at least you listened to it. And it'll make my day. And that's the way that you can pay for this website and let me know that you want it to keep going. So happy shooting. Go out there, take some pictures. If it's a cloudy day, it's the best day to take pictures. Sunny days aren't good days, you know, because you're going to have hard shadows. And there's always something good to shoot. And you just got to be creative. And you can make it look good with a little bit of practice. And I hope to see a lot of good pictures. Send me some of your pictures, and God bless.